and welcome again to the Essential Install podcast series. My name is David Kitchener and I'm the Managing Director of All Things Media Limited, the company that brings you Essential Install magazine and the EI Live exhibition, amongst other projects. Whilst our podcasts have been dedicated to specific industry topics, we went off piste with the last one with an integrator turned distributor. For this podcast, we are producing something different again. Today, we are joined by Dr. Shelley James, founder and managing director of the Age of Light Innovations, and I quote, "an initiative with a vision to build communities and ignite an enthusiasm for light and well-being in the new digital age." The Age of Light Innovations is working with major manufacturers to educate the world on this subject. Welcome, Dr. Shelley James.
It's great to be here.
Speaking of lighting manufacturers and lighting specialists, we're also joined today by Paul Wafer, the Managing Director of Lighting Specialist, Waco Lighting Controls. Welcome, Paul.
Morning, David. Morning, everyone.
And again, of course, we're joined by our resident Editor-in-Chief, Daniel Sate. Welcome again, Dan.
Hi there. Good to be back.
Okay, let's set the scene for this fascinating discussion. Individuals are becoming increasingly aware of the impact light has on our brains and bodies. This has resulted in a new understanding of the environmental impact, particularly the way we light our homes and cities. So I guess the first question to you, Shelley, is what is happening in the body that makes exposure to positive light sources important?
Well, you could say that everything is happening in the body relating to light. About 80% of all the genes that are expressed in the body are related, have some level of entrainment or connection to light. And really, until relatively recently, we thought that there were the only impacts of light were to do with the visual system. So whether we could see to get around, whether we could see colours correctly, and whether there was so much glare in the environment that we struggled to kind of see shapes properly. So those are the sort of standard, well understood visual impacts of light. And as we've been able to wire up the brain and the body to watch the brain and body react to different sorts of stimuli, we can see just how disturbing those things like glare can be. We've also been able to see how the ability to perceive color shifts our interest in food. It shifts our ability to relate to other people. So social signals through color have also become increasingly well understood. So there are a load of what we call visual impacts of light. And then only about 20 years ago, when scientists were wondering how completely blind people could work out when it was time to get up and go to sleep, did we start to experiment with mice, and then about 17 years ago discovered the same special set of cells in the retina, which are tuned to wavelengths of light and respond to the day and night cycle. And so that's we call that the circadian system, and that responds to brightness and darkness and particular wavelengths of light, particularly coming from above, which makes sense because we evolved under the sky. We thought initially that they were just one sort and they just were interested in one kind of wavelength, but actually as we learn more about this amazing system, we can also see that it regulates another whole set of responses to do with mood. So there are signaling pathways which are very closely related right in the center of the brain, which regulate how happy you feel. So your circadian system, it turns out that if you mess up or if you disrupt that natural way of waking up and going to sleep, a whole cascade of things stop happening correctly, including rest and repair, rewiring of the brain, particularly at young children or older people. There are different changes that are going on. And so we know that disrupting that has a catastrophic effect. It's been called a carcinogen. So we can talk more about that, I'm sure. And then there's another area, which is flicker. We hadn't realized how much, even though you can actually physically see flicker, how much that was disrupting different parts of the brain, which is exhausting. And it ends up, particularly for children or people with different neural conditions, can be tremendously disruptive. The final thing that we discovered recently to do with light and light control has been to do with the way that the eye grows. And we used to think that if your mum and dad wore glasses, you would have to wear them too. But actually, you can cut your chances of wearing glasses by up to 40% by the amount of light that your eye gets at key moments in your life, and particularly between the ages of sort of 0 and 18, when your eyes are still growing. And it turns out that, like plants, your eyes need a certain amount of particular wavelengths of light. Well, actually, mostly they don't really care about what wavelength, but they just need a whole bunch of light in order to grow, like plants, to grow the right shape. And if children get enough of the right kind of light, enough of the right kind of light, when they're growing up, then they're much less likely to get myopia, particularly, which is the way that the eye grows too long, like a plant growing in the dark. So, as you can see, I'm passionate about this, and there's so little information out there about, reliable, independent information out there about how light can shape your world, change your life, and a growing understanding of how that might work. And what's also great is that there is finally lighting system. There's actually beautiful lighting and lighting systems which allow us to really deliver healthy lighting. So the advice used to be just go outside, but now we can see that there are ways that we can use the built environment to create spaces which support not only children and adults, but also going into chronic care, older people, people with dementia. We can use light to control or to support health and happiness through the whole life. So there you go. That's my pitch.
Interesting. And I have to ask, you're working with some of the major, as I've already said, some of the major lighting manufacturers. The question I asked you the other day, do they get it? Are they getting it? Did you approach them to educate them, or did they approach you to educate the world?
Well, it actually started during lockdown, when I noticed that the children around me, my nieces and godchildren, were really struggling, trying to kind of do their homework indoors under a sort of an old compact fluorescent bulb. And I knew that lighting would make a massive difference. So I reached out to the scientists around the world and educators and the manufacturers around the world who are making good quality lighting. And they all kindly offered some interviews, some time to share their knowledge. And out of that came a call from them all to say, could we make this information more widely available? And so I created three of the manufacturers, Seoul Semicon, Signify, and Fagerhult, chipped in some money to help me to make some very simple YouTube, sort of TikTok style videos targeted at teens. I worked with a group of teens in Bristol to make sure that that it was information delivered in a way that they could understand and information they were interested in. And we started to launch that with some very small budgets on social media. And for £1,500, we've just had 1.8 million reach, with the most amazing engagement levels. Translated that into German and Italian. And we've got on a particular video that the teens said they would like to hear more about, to do with blue light, well, the impact of screen time and learning and sleep. The German video has been getting 245% click-through, which means that the German teens on average, German-speaking teens, so there's Benelux in there as well, the German-speaking teens are clicking through an average of 2.5 times to watch these things again. So the appetite is there. And out of that, we realise that 80% of the people who buy lights for the spaces where we live and die in, we spend 90% of our time indoors, 80% of those people have little or no training. They might be interested, but they have no training in lighting at all. So the manufacturers, so that's Seoul, Signify, Zumtobel, Glamox, Luxonic, Foz, and BIOS, they've all come forward and said, let's now make the business case for healthy lighting, and reach out to those communities who really shape the light in our world, and make the next campaign, the Luna Pro campaign, is targeted at Luna's mum and dad, so that they can make happier, healthier decisions about lighting as well, and understand that there is a really powerful business case for choosing a better quality light and making sure that that delivers higher performance at in every way, and also has less environmental impact, because we're learning more and more about how light in the wrong place actually has a catastrophic effect on pollinating insects and migration of birds. Anyway, that's another story. But so the manufacturers can see the value. They want to. They're all passionate about changing the world with light, as I am. And so they have. I suppose it was a combination of me saying, "Does anybody want to get to come in?" And they all said, and they everybody said yes.
So you approached them, and presumably they're now fully on board, and they must have welcomed you with open arms, one assumes. Okay, Shelley, tell us more about, in your view, what are the real keys in terms of human-centric lighting? When it comes to lighting, intelligent lighting and control of ambient light, what should designers of lighting systems actually be trying to achieve?
I suppose the clue is in the name. It's human-centered lighting. So what they should be looking for are lighting systems which are as close as possible to the natural cycle of day and night, to light which is bright during the day and dark at night, actually, light that doesn't flicker, because the visual system, the brain, can actually pick up flicker, light that doesn't create excessive glare, so that people can see correctly. So those are the basics, really. You know, light, bright light during the day. But we also know, for example, that the visual system obviously was designed under the sun. So the parts of the visual system which are noticing light for its circadian system are actually particularly sensitive to light from above and on the surfaces around you. And we know that the parts of the visual system that are designed to sort of see what you're doing, they are particularly obviously sensitive to light and strong contrast on the surface plane. So thinking about light during the day, it's glare, flicker, orientation, and reflectance. And then light in the evening, we know that these special cells which regulate your day-night cycle, they are particularly sensitive to these particular blue wavelengths, but mostly they just need it dim. So you need to be working, finding a low level, sort of physically low level, because of the way the visual system is designed, but also dim and warm in the evening. And then at night, it needs to be dark. And actually, it seems as though even light from sort of a Kindle or something in the room is enough, because your eyes are closed, but actually the light is traveling through your eyelids. Actually, light in the room, even from a telly that's on or other sensors that are on, disrupts sleep in a way that is absolutely measurable, and it reduces the deep sleep, it reduces alertness the next day, all those kinds of things. So those are things you need to think about. Is very often people sort of try think about the visual system like a sort of a chemistry set, and they say, well, I'm going to take out all the blue, then you're going to be fine. But actually, we know that the light level needs to be low. The blue is the sort of is in the margin. So, but there's also a physiological, an emotional dimension, where we know that people behave differently in bright, cool light from above. They experience those spaces as more public. We know that they eat more food, they eat more calories, they behave differently, they have more intimate conversations in lower level, warmer light, because it sort of evokes that sort of fireside feeling. So you can use light to modulate people's emotional states as much as their physical states. Of course, the two go together.
Interesting. Well, as we've discussed before, Shelley, our industry is the custom install AV and home automation industry, and lighting, of course, is a huge part of that. Paul, no doubt you advise many integrators and installers along the way. Well, I know you do. I see your social media posts. What's your view on this perspective, Paul?
I think we spend so much time at work under, you know, what used to be fluorescent lighting, but it's now LED, and in our cars and at home, that artificial lighting has always been quite artificial. And until recently, the technology hasn't been there to do anything but either energy save or aesthetics. There's never really been the thought of, you know, what effect the lighting is having to us as an individual. So over the past 25 years I've been doing this, there's not really been this kind of research available to look at how it's affecting us, really. So the home, you know, is somewhere, you know, you're there to relax and be with family and wind down a part of the day. So it's very important that whatever lighting has been specified within your home is capable of achieving that. There's not much you can do with a pendant hanging out the middle of the ceiling, you know, there's other than switch it on or off and possibly dim it. But using good quality lighting and then controlling it sympathetically to the people that are in the room and the environment is something that, you know, we've been trying to push for many years. But mostly, certainly in a working environment, it comes down to really energy saving and cost, rather than the effect of the employees that are under it.
So is the well-being creeping into your world, Paul, in terms of lighting?
Yes, certainly. And I think that the more that the large luminaire manufacturers for commercial office lighting accept the fact that, you know, the workforce will be happier in a nice bright environment. We sat in front of displays all day long looking at nice blue light. It'd be nice to have a break from it. And I think being able to balance that without having to necessarily manually press a button or flick a light switch, have it automatically throughout the day change and give you that effect and that break from the displays. It will give you that feeling of being outside. It's a lovely day today, blue skies, and you definitely feel that in our offices here. If the sun's out, everybody's happier. And I think, you know, in our homes, you know, we have clients that spend a lot of time traveling by air. Well, they did until last year. They want to get home, relax, and recharge. And you simply can't do that if the lighting is against you and it is quite basic. Flickering is something that Shelley brought up, which is quite a bugbear of everybody. And since LED lighting has been introduced, that has been the key hardest part to avoid. And that does come down to very clever electronic design within the luminaires and within control systems to avoid that. And for the past, I think, 10, 12 years, we've been producing very high resolution dimming products to stop that. And it's just getting that message across to people that it makes a big difference. Even if you can't noticeably see a flicker, your brain and your eyes actually can, you know, just because it's not visible, it doesn't mean it's not happening. And it's nice to hear an independent view of it that Shelley's put across.
I mean, it's interesting to note that 1 in 10, yeah, about 10% of people do suffer from headaches or some kind of flicker-induced problem, and that most people don't realise that that's the problem until it goes away. And so that's an example of something where educating people can make a massive difference. And some of the work that I'm doing now, the interviews that I'm doing now, are with people like the Leesman Index about the cost that in terms of employee satisfaction, employee retention, absenteeism. There, you can actually measure the difference to the bottom line, and that makes, I mean, I think that's where the argument needs to go now, because the technology is there and your amazing controls are there to do it correctly. And something else that's interesting in this field is now the fact that we can have full spectrum lights, and we can modulate the brightness without the level of glare. I mean, looking at your office and actually where I'm sitting now, it's not really bright enough for our brains to know that it's daytime, which is going to disrupt our ability to get to sleep. So I think that the things that you guys can do, Paul, in combination with what the manufacturers can now deliver is absolutely amazing, and it can transform people's ability to recover from illness. We can see some examples that I'm working with in the States where people are leaving hospital more quickly. They don't need as much pain relief. People with jet lag can, there's a lot of work on shift work. People with jet lag can use the light in their homes to recover more quickly and be more productive and happier, which is obviously what we all want.
I think we always see the aesthetic side of certainly in the residential control market. It's always about the aesthetics, making a kitchen look beautiful, or but it's not necessarily the size of the budget of the project that that counts. You know, we see very, very modest properties have beautiful attention to detail and good quality light, full spectrum, very high CRI, you know, 99 or higher CRI, and it really makes such a huge difference. And you can go into enormous properties which they've spent masses and masses of money on, and it's flat, everything's the same color, there's no real detail to it. And this is where lighting designers come in, and their ability to specify the light where it's needed and the quality of light, and unfortunately it often comes down to having a client that understands this and understands that spending a little bit more will benefit everybody, you know.
So Paul, it's the end user, i.e. the house owner in the residential side of things, that need educating, and therefore is the integrator installer equipped to be able to educate the end user?
I think with education, and that's something that Shelley's working on, I think the integrators can get across to clients how important it is that they're not just looking at the bottom line figure of how much it's going to cost, but actually, you know, how much happier everybody will be at home.
I think something else that might be worth mentioning, I mean, particularly in COVID and post-COVID, is that our relationship with our homes is changing, and we're expecting ourselves to work from home and be productive at home. And we're expecting our children to learn at home. As I mean, we've always done our homework at home, but you know, we're actually spending time during the day at home as well. So if you think about how much you might invest in lessons after school for your kids, or good quality shoes or food for your kids, you're thinking about their performance and their ability to win prizes of every kind. Then you could see that as another tool that's as important as the air quality, or you wouldn't skimp on their shoes, you wouldn't skimp on a helmet for their bicycle. And particularly when you look at how for adolescents, their ability, the way that their brains are rewiring during that critical time, if they don't get enough sleep and if they don't get enough alertness during the day, some connections literally don't happen, and that affects their ability to make decisions. It makes a big difference to their attitude to risk, for example. They're much more vulnerable online. Their financial decision-making is impaired. There are all kinds of... we know that something called social jet lag, where if you wake up more than an hour later, your natural, your normal weekday routine is disrupted in a significant way. We know that increases likelihood of obesity, of depression, of alcohol abuse. So you could see this as an investment in your child's health in the same way as you would in their cycle helmet. So I mean, I think there are really powerful financial arguments to make. If you're spending money on organic food, then the lighting should be a no-brainer.
Yeah, but I think it is education that will get that across to people, because it's very easy. You know, people can see something, you know, security for your home, you know, an alarm system, or, you know, good locks. It's, you know, people understand that, but they don't really understand the difference between, you know, one lamp and another. And when people actually get that message across, I think it will sink in, and people, I mean, certainly the last 12 months, everybody's been in lockdown, you know, a lot more time at home. And I think certainly for our position, you know, people have been spending, what they haven't been spending on holidays, have been spending improving their home, making it look nicer, be a better environment for family. And, you know, lighting is really, really key, really a top point on that.
Essential. Essential Install magazine is the leading title for the smart home, AV and home cinema markets. Packed monthly with news, views, features, products and case studies, it's a must read for any integration company looking to source new products and increase their profits. If you'd prefer to get your smart home and high quality AV news online, then get along to essentialinstall.com. Updated daily with news, product releases and case studies. Essential Install is the last word in smart home, AV and home cinema coverage. Don't miss out. Stay up to date with Essential Install in print and online.
Dan, you've been sitting there quite quiet about these things. I know you've got a couple of questions you want to ask Shelley, do you?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I find this subject really fascinating, and it's actually something we haven't been able to talk about too much in the past, just because, like has been said already, the research wasn't there, the technology wasn't really there. But this is a subject really close to my heart, because relating back to what we were talking about earlier about the fact that we used to think that, you know, if your parents wore glasses, you would wear glasses. And my family, a really good demonstration of that. My parents grew up in a relatively sort of suburban-ish kind of urban type environment. Both wore glasses, quite sort of thick glasses. And we were all moved to, for various different reasons, North Norfolk when I was really little. And I grew up pretty much outside, up in those crucial ages that were mentioned earlier. But my point is that because I spent so much time outside, clearly that equation we were talking about earlier has had an effect on me, because I still have, thank God, really, really good vision. Really different to what my parents experienced. And so the power of what we've been talking about is really apparent. And I think we in this industry have talked a lot about other ways of kind of making people's lives better and nicer, like audio is a huge passion of mine, and something we talk about in the magazine all of the time, how music and not just music, but audio sounds can make you feel better as a person, because it connects you to yourself, it connects you to nature, it connects you to things that you relate to. So lighting, moving on to that, is potentially even more powerful, because literally what we're trying to do here is mimic what the body really wants to experience. You know, we've been talking for a while now about, you know, about circadian rhythms and about human-centric lighting. So my question really is, it's all very well us talking about this and getting very excited about the potential, but what sort of tips can we offer lighting designers and installers to actually practically make this happen? So it's all very well us going, well, you know, the potential is there. This is what humans like in terms of experiencing lighting. But practically, how do we now make this happen in terms of the way lighting's installed or designed?
I mean, I think that the first thing is that, as I think Paul mentioned, if a client is willing, understands the value, then we've already got on a good start. But I suppose, where would you start? I mean, as I said before, the simplest thing is a good quality, bright daylight kind of light from above is going to deliver that wake up information. A good quality, dim, warm light from a low level is going to deliver the wind down information, making sure that things aren't flickering and buzzing around during the night will help people to sleep properly. Lights which are positioned so that the you're not getting too much glare from screens and sort of interference with windows is going to make a big difference. So, I mean, actually, common sense. Imagine what you want in a space as a human being. It's pretty much common sense. But we also know that if the quality of you talked earlier about, Paul, about the aesthetics, actually, you need to be demanding when you specify the light, it needs to be as close to the full spectrum as possible. So, and if you ask for that, and you ask for low flicker, and you ask for low glare, and you ask for something that's tunable, but where tuning it is you tune through the full spectrum, then the manufacturers are going to start to say, oh, I can see there's a demand, I will deliver that. So the whole system needs to shift. And so I think that the first thing is for the specifiers to say this matters, and to demand a better quality light from the manufacturers, and to help the consumers to understand that it's going to make a difference to their performance as human beings, and to their happiness and health.
Yeah, I think what's really interesting is that some of the solutions here are, like you say, actually pretty simple. And, you know, it's having, you know, installers are used to recognizing that audio has to be in the right place for it to work properly. Not so much up to a point with lighting, I think they do. But I think the really simple things about when it's daytime, lighting needs to be above you. And when it's evening, nighttime, it needs to be lower down. I think actually that's kind of a revelation for a lot of people. And I was having this conversation the other day with my wife, and I was saying to her, why do you love that lamp so much? Why is the lamp always on in the evening? And it suddenly twigged from what you were saying in the article that we did. It's a fire. That's what it is. And I just never thought about it like that before. And I just thought it should be revolutionary, but it kind of is in terms of thinking about, because I think what Paul was saying earlier, there has been a little bit of an emphasis on making everything look pretty and highlighting this about this room and highlighting that, which is nice. And, there are values to having that aesthetic appeal, but actually thinking about what humans really want in internally, I think it can be, could be a really revolutionary sort of approach.
I think something else to mention is that very often you see sort of show homes designed with nothing in it and nobody in it. Something that really makes a big difference is surface reflectance. So you can use light to highlight, to invite somebody to enjoy the space, to take their eyes for a walk, so you can add richness, you can add complexity and layers to create an experience which is as rich and beautiful and highlights the things and the way people live. But the other thing to think about is that as we get older, our eyesight changes, the lenses of our eyes get dimmer, essentially they don't let as much light in. So if you're working in a space which is multi-generational, particularly or older people, their ability to handle contrast changes, their ability to handle colour changes, because essentially a lot of the blue wavelengths are cut out. So we know that having good quality light in transitional spaces, like around doorways or in social spaces, makes a massive difference to your health and happiness in those spaces. So that's something else to think about, is what are the key areas, invest your time and money and effort in the key areas where you spend most of your time, and where those transactions are most important, around food, around entrance, coming and going, around learning. Those sorts of things can make it just, it's about choosing where you want to focus your effort and making sure that you design spaces with the people in mind, not just with the photograph.
Yeah, I think it's all too commonplace that people will just look at lighting as a illumination, and it'll be a flat light, you know, 700, 800 lux across the whole room. And the only thing you can really do is make it lighter or dimmer. If you layer the lighting, like you're saying, Shelley, lighting from above, on the walls, corners, you know, table lamps are particularly good for that, then, you know, you can have different scenes or moods for different times of the day. So if it's breakfast, you want to be bright, you want, you know, things to be, you know, you want your food to look, you know, rich and colourful. You want to be woken up and ready for work. But in the evening, you know, you want to relax. And so bringing the lighting down, moving where the lighting is incredibly important. And whenever we've done our training courses, most of our training course is really telling people about light, not lighting controls. Lighting controls is sort of your insurance premium. So you can throw as much lighting at it as you like and then use the control system to bring it back, tailor it down and adapt it for the moods that you're wanting to do. And having a bit of variation in the type of lighting, not just hundreds of downlights or you know, LED tape everywhere and everything turned blue because blue's trendy. I think it's incredibly important to get that variation across to your client, and it makes the world of difference on your project. And it isn't rocket science. It doesn't have to be incredibly expensive or elaborate. You know, just a small amount of common sense, which isn't very common these days, but it can make it. And I see, you know, kids and young people constantly on their phones. You know, it's just constant, non-stop looking at their phones. And I, you know, it's it can't be good for us. And people happily spend lots of money on vitamins, but they don't actually think about really what our bodies actually need naturally, you know, natural daylight, go for a walk down to the shops rather than, you know, ordering something online. You know, it's good for us. And I think if we can improve our working environment and our home environment, then it's going to be good for us, good for our families. Yeah.
I mean, I think just in terms of installation and choice of luminaires and things, I'm trained as an electrician as well, because I wanted to understand how this stuff worked. And I noticed that so more and more LEDs were, you buy these sort of built-in units. And I would encourage people to think about units which have the ability to retrofit.
Or separate driver or separate lamp.
A separate driver, yeah. So that you can, the environmental impact of these sort of completely integrated units is really shocking, because you just have to rip the whole thing out. And as the use of the building, the age of the people in it, the things that you want to do in a space shift, and as the technology gets better, being able to shift the light, that change the driver, change the light bulb itself, is going to offer some important benefits in terms of the environmental impact of these things. Something else I'd just like to mention is that in some work I've done with the Helen Hamlin Centre with the Royal College, we noticed that a lot of buildings, particularly schools, the control systems were so complicated that they couldn't work out how to kind of make the blinds work and stuff. So they ended up switching on the lights. And so I think making sure that the controls are intuitive and that they make the most of any daylight that's available seems to be something that your guys could do a lot to support.
I think as techie people, it a lot of the time the people, we can do this, we can do that. You know, this systems can do millions of different things, but you need to really take a step back and go, well, actually, it's not the techie person that's using it. It could be, you know, it's the client's grandmother. It has to be, you know, made simple. And I think all of the successful projects we've ever done, and where the clients then move to a different property and go, yes, we're definitely going to have that, is where it's just been made very, very simple. Not necessarily the technology simple, but the user interface is made simple. And I think as techie people, it's quite easy to forget that, who's using it.
I think from what we've been saying so far, I think the power and the technology to make very significant changes and make the lighting systems more human-centric is already with us. We already have it. You know, we're already doing it. And I think it is a case of educating people about the how the lighting works, how it affects people, because we can already do most of the things we've been talking about, you know, in terms of where the lighting comes from, what time of day it is. You know, these are all actually relatively simple things to legislate for. And like you said, Paul, with the interactions, I mean, it shouldn't be any more complicated than morning, middle of the day, evening, nighttime. That's it. It doesn't need to be any more complicated than that, because your body doesn't want anything more complicated than that. And yeah, of course, it's party time, then you want sparkling lights and you want your pond to be lit up and all that kind of stuff, and all that stuff that this industry loves doing and will still keep doing. But I think that just bearing in mind what we've been talking about today in terms of just thinking about the human experience. And I think installers are already used to thinking in that way, but for other things. So they will go at great length to ask someone, what type of music do you like? Do you like to listen to music loud? Do you like movies? Do you like sport? All these kind of, they're used to kind of gathering this type of information, and they've just got to learn to do it for lighting as well, you know, and start thinking about these things and applying what we already have to that end, to create things that feel natural for people, because I think that's clearly where the industry needs to go. It's clearly where there's a lot of benefit in terms of not just financial for the installers and, you know, selling more systems, but just on a human level, it's just something that we need to do to make life better for people.
I think something else that I would mention is that some architects are specialising in buildings or homes for people with special needs or, you know, older people living at home, and your systems can support, so people coming forward and saying, so what can we do to support people with dementia in their homes? What can we do? And lighting systems and sensitive controls can actually make a massive difference to the way that somebody with dementia sleeps, their ability to interact. So There's also been some lovely work in schools where using pendant lights, sort of alternating overhead lights for sort of group work, and then, well, sort of instructions where the teacher's giving main instructions, and then using pendant, switching to pendant lights for sort of small group work, the decibel levels went down by 6 or 7 decibels. The kids were moving around less. So kids who had social issues or mobility issues, they found themselves in a more inclusive environment. So sensitive lighting and controls can really help us to, so you can imagine that buildings in the future, there's something called the WELL standard, which includes lighting as one of the concepts there. You can imagine that if you integrate a sensitive, well thought through lighting system, that could be a massive selling point. So that's something else to perhaps consider in the business case that you make to your clients, is that not only do they find themselves living in healthier, happier homes, but also it might be something that they can use as a way to support the ongoing value of the property.
So it's fascinating stuff. I mean, I just having said that we've got quite a lot of power to do stuff now, I am kind of interested in about maybe what happens next. One of the things in the article that you wrote for us in the last issue, what I found was really a point I didn't realise that I thought was really amazing, was that the correct me if I'm wrong here, the retina is actually an outcropping of the brain. So that blew my mind a little bit, because it actually made a lot of sense to a lot of things that I've been thinking about recently, in terms of sort of like human perception and how you actually see the world, and how like a bee's perception of the world is completely different to the way we see it. So is our perception real, or is the bee's perception real? There's a whole like load of mind-blowing stuff we can get into there, but what, for the sake of this conversation, I am interested in, and you mentioned kind of helping people with learning difficulties or people with dementia. Where are we going next with technology? What other things we might be able to do to either help people with difficulties, or just in terms of general sort of human condition? What technologically speaking might come next that we could kind of enhance people's well-being, but also kind of bring them kind of other experiences and interesting things to have in their homes and at work?
Well, it's a really exciting time. Not only do we have the sorts of controls that you guys do so beautifully, but also we have full spectrum lighting, we have low flicker, we're able to manage optics. So that's almost becoming standard. The next thing that's coming through is a greater understanding of how there's something called a chronotype, whether you're a lark or an owl. So, and as you grow older, your eyes are changing shape, they're changing their ability to perceive things. Different when you are exhausted, different emotional states, people with different kinds of conditions, degenerative conditions, or even physical conditions. We all respond to light slightly differently, in fact. And so there are personal light meters now, which link to apps, which could link to some of Paul's amazing systems, which would allow you to actually tailor your light diet in the same way that you might discover that you've got a sensitivity to wheat, or you could actually start to tailor your light diet so that the spaces that you move through are designed to support your particular chronotype. And perhaps if you are a shift worker, or you're taking care of a baby or an elderly relative, you could use these new kinds of optics, which allow you to shape the location of the light in your visual field. You could use those new kinds of optics to make sure that as you move through space and time, your needs are met at the same time as living alongside other people. So I think the next amazing development is going to be a greater understanding of our personal relationship with light, and the ability to choose lights, like your wife with the lamp, to choose lights which make you feel happy and healthy and productive at different times of your life, and living alongside other people with slightly different needs. So that's my expectation for the next generation of lighting, is a personal light diet which allows you to support your own circadian, your own mood, all those sorts of dimensions of your life.
Same question to you, I think, Paul.
Well, I think I mirror Shelley's view on that. I mean, whether we like it or not, we're carrying around technology that can do all of these amazing monitoring, you know, functions, whether it's, you know, what you've ordered from Amazon or Tesco's, whether you've if you can, in your workplace, you've spent 8-9 hours below a certain amount and type of light, then on your journey home, I mean, my car will do all sorts of things in the same sort of way as what we've been talking with different lighting. And then when you get home, it can then complement it. So we're all quite passionate about fitness and, you know, how many, you know, protein, carb intake we've had throughout the day. You know, why can't it be the same for our well-being of light? So we need to make it easy and accessible for people. And I think the core technology is there. It needs some guidance, you know, from manufacturers, from researchers to enable us to then provide that for clients.
And there is the education job to be done. Shelley, you've got a big job.
I'm delighted to be doing it. It's so exciting. It's a great time to be doing this. And the more I talk about it, the more I find myself with a tribe of like-minded people. So it's a great time.
Interesting. Well, it's a fascinating subject. I think that's about time for this podcast, which just leaves me to say thank you enormously to Dr. Shelley James. Shelley, what's your email address?
It's Shelley, Shelley, at ageoflightinnovations.com.
Brilliant. Thank you for your time today, Shelley.
It's a great pleasure.
Paul, thank you for to Paul Wafer from Waco Controls. If you want to contact Paul, he can be found, of course, on at paul@wacocontrols.com. That's correct, Paul, isn't it?
Yeah, that's correct. It's been a pleasure. Thank you. Yeah.
Okay. Fascinating subject. Maybe we'll do another one on this, Dan. There's clearly a lot to talk about.
It's huge, absolutely. Mm. We're only just getting started. Like I said earlier, we have got some of the technology already. There's more coming, but it's getting an understanding of actually some relatively simple things you can do to really change things around.
I find it an absolutely fascinating subject. Anyway, thank you for listening, and keep your ears open for the next in the Essential Install podcast series. Goodbye from all of us, and have a great day. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the Essential Install Magazine podcast. Please subscribe to this podcast in your chosen podcast app so you never miss an episode. Stay up to date with Essential Install in print and online. Visit essentialinstall.com.